Wrestling Daft presents The Daft Sheet. To butcher a well-known quote, those who can wrestle and those who can't podcast. But even the best wrestlers also podcast, making this link to start the show an absolute shambles from the very off. Hello and welcome to The Daft Sheet, a new podcast from Wrestling Daft, hosted by me, Chris Jack, former pro wrestler, yearly first man eliminated in the Wrestling Daft run-in rumble, and for the duration of this podcast, the editor-in-chief of a new fictional wrestling dirt sheet. Each episode, I'll be joined by two of the great and the good of the Wrestling Daft listenership as they vie to get their picks of the top wrestling-related stories into this week's paper. They'll aim to fill the front page with the most newsworthy wrestling news of the week, the back page with the most sporting moment of the last 7 days, page three with the most titillating nuggets of gossip, the TV pages with the most must-see viewing, and play agony aunt to a wrestling dilemma in our Dear Dafties problem page. And this week's freelancer chancers are the unpronounceable Stephen Roachyboy Roach, and a man probably far better positioned to be hosting this podcast than me, Billy Stacking of the Scottish Wrestling Network. Lads, how are you this evening?
I'm a bit nervous, to be honest, because I realised when we were setting this up and talking about what's to come, I don't watch an awful lot of wrestling, I've found out. So this is going to be very interesting for me trying to pitch some ideas to you for the staff sheet.
You know what? You probably still manage to watch more wrestling than Grado normally does in the main show. So you can solace yourself with that, Billy. And what about yourself, Steve? How have you been getting on this week?
I'm very, very warm. It's unusually hot for May in Glasgow. Just Stop Oil, I think, are right.
Well, Glasgow hopefully should there's not be any run-ins with orange powder on this podcast.
It's not July yet.
It's not July yet, no. It'll probably get even worse by then. So we're going to have plenty to discuss. It's been a bumper weekend for wrestling across AEW, WWE, and everywhere else in between. But with the week that's just gone by and seeing Karen Jarrett nearly break her ankle, falling over stilettos, smashing Aubrey Edwards with a guitar, and Matt Jackson nearly literally taking the heads off the Blackpool Combat Club with his exploding Nike SB Chicago's. Gentlemen, what is the most dangerous footwear that you guys have ever adorned your feet with?
Fucking rollerblades.
Rollerblades?
Who the hell, who thought that'd be a good idea? What a stupid, stupid invention. And I say that because it was there was a phase in primary school where everybody was wearing rollerblades, so I felt I had to join in, and I was useless at it. I went on my arse more times than I've had hot meals trying to wear them. So I would go with rollerblades in that one.
Rollerblades for Steve. What about yourself, Billy?
I'm going to go for whatever ones I was wearing, like the days I broke my arms and it definitely wasn't Strongbow. It definitely wasn't cider related or alcohol related. It was definitely the footwear that was the problem in that situation. So, many a broken bone and sair mornings because of falls. So, yeah, whatever footwear I'm wearing at that point. So, yeah, that's the problem.
You sound like you need to invest in a pair of the Permagrips 1999 for Timpsons. That sounds like what you need to do there, Billy.
There's Timpsons up the road. It's fine. I'll get them some in the morning.
Key cutting, shoes, what else can you ask for? They're not sponsoring this podcast as yet, but you never know. You never know what might happen. So what we'll do is we'll get cracked on and start to fill the very first edition of the Daft Sheet. Now, the first thing that we're going to look at is what's going to go on the front page. What's been the biggest wrestling news story of the week? And I think I will come to you, Steve, first. Stephen, what would be your pick to be on the front page of the Daft Sheet?
I think I'm going to go with the happenings from Double or Nothing. The big ending was the main event of Anarchy in the arena. We had Kinosuke Takeshita, say that three times fast, turn heel on the Elite. A couple of weeks earlier, we had the Shock Don Callis heel turn. Well, they say Shock. I actually wasn't surprised at it. I think it was always on the horizon. I think Takeshita turning heel was the more shocking one. So I think We've got a big storyline developing there. The question remains, is Takeshita part of the Blackpool Combat Club? Is Callis part of it? I don't think that's the case. I think I can see Takeshita being the fifth man in the probable blood and guts match that we're gonna see soon, hopefully. But I don't actually mean, that doesn't mean to say he's going to be the BCC. I think Callis is going to slowly build his own faction. I think he's going to take a bunch of youngsters on and kind of create a faction that's going to rival the elite. I could see him taking on guys like maybe the Gun Club. I could maybe see them, or probably also, I'd love to see him take Ricky Starks. It's a risky one because you'd probably want to keep Ricky Starks as a babyface. But I feel Ricky Starks needs a bit of help. He is a big star. He is very over. There's still something there he needs. And I think turning heel and putting him with Callis could be that. Could be the thing that propels him. And Callis can promote him as the guy that's going to take the mantle off Kenny Omega as the God of Wrestling.
It's an interesting theory. I mean, like, off the back of Double or Nothing, or certainly off the back of he's beat down by Bullet Club Gold. It seems like FTR are kind of aligning themselves with Ricky Starks there.
Aye.
So it might be a wee while before there's a kind of a heel turn for him. But it's interesting, you know, a Don Callis-led faction that doesn't involve Kenny Omega, that's not involved with it with the BCC. It's hard for me anyway. It's kind of difficult to see where you put in. I mean, would you maybe bring Hobbs in, something like that? You know,
Hobbs,
like,
aye, that would make sense. Kind of there's like, aye, Hobbs, or but I'm also trying to think of someone who's like, who can be a great worker. That's got a kind of, that can be similar to Omega, and I think Starks is someone that meets that mold. It's hard to really. Oh, it's just dawned on me. Will Ospreay.
Ospreay bringing the United Empire under Callis. That's an interesting.
Yeah, like if we can, I mean, they've signed Ozzy Open.
Mm-hmm.
Is that maybe trying to open the door for us Ospreay to finally get signed? Because, you know, they've already had the one big match at Wrestle Kingdom, and of course Forbidden Doors next month.
Yep.
You know, maybe I'm overthinking it, but that could be a line of, you know, a storyline progression there.
And again, well, with that, obviously you've got Takeshita there. There's the Japanese link, the New Japan stuff with Ospreay and Aussie Open and everything. So that's not out with the realms of possibility. Billy, yeah. what's your take on that? What do you think of Callis's despicableness, I suppose, over the last wee while in regards to Kenny Omega?
So I'm going to take your word for it, guys. I don't watch the AEW. So, but when you're mentioning names, like ones that were like big hearing the buzz on Twitter and online, I don't know if this would be a name to throw out there, but what about Jay White? Wasn't he supposed to be kind of a very big deal?
There was history there with Ospreay, because he was, or not anyway, Omega. Omega actually wanted to bring him into Bullet Club. He said no. Then 6 months later, I think he branched off and made his own Bullet Club, and then I think they were planning a big feud, but that's when the AEW started and they branched out there. So yeah, that makes sense. And now he's in AEW, so yeah, that could another big one they could reopen.
So Callis basically taking the reins of managing Bullet Club Gold then, and then bring Takeshita into that. Good opportunity to bring in any of the other Japanese ones, you know, break Kenny Omega's heart completely, bring in Ibushi. You know,
aye, like that, Lloyd. Because Ibushi, we don't know what's going on with Ibushi. You would have thought by now AEW would have brought him on, because you would think Omega would desperately want his best mate with him.
It's interesting times. And what about, you know, in regards to the Elite? You know, they suffered that defeat in the Anarchy in the Arena match. It seemed like they're back on, you know, on the same page in regards to Hangman Page being back aligned with them. Where do you see things going for the Elite at the moment? Off the back of that,
I think they'll get their revenge in the blood and guts match, because I mean, this is how it plays out. They won, the BCC won one, so obviously the Elite's now got to get the revenge. The more interesting thing is, who's the fifth man going to be? Could it be Ibushi? That's the one that they make change, or do they? I guess there's Adam Cole, but he's got the feud with Jericho on the go as well. So that, I think that might rule him out. As a whole, I think they need to get something going with Hangman again. He had a bit of a disappointing title run. They need. He lost a bit of traction. He did pick up a wee bit with that. That big blood feud he had with Moxley, but now it's kind of regressed again. Because he is an eternal fan favourite, but they need to do something big for him again to get him moving if they want to get him back in the main event scene. Because he would be a lot of people's pick to end MJF's title feud, but it's got to be at a time where he's been booked strong and he's got a lot of momentum behind him to do it.
Yep, it's certainly interesting times. And, you know, we go from... Omega at the end of, you know, in one of the interviews after, or I think it was maybe his address to the crowd at the end of Double or Nothing, he was saying he had a few fans outside the AEW that he could perhaps call on. And going from, you know, that friendship side of things, we'll go over to Billy now, who is, I think, is going to tell us about a bit of family drama that's going on the other side of wrestling for your pick for
yes.
The front page.
So my pick is Roman Reigns hitting 1,000 days on the same night that the Bloodline flatlines. That's the wee headline grabber for you. So, of course, at Night of Champions, we saw the tag team main event being Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, all going as you'd expect during the match. Usos came out and mistakenly super kicked Solo Sikoa. Roman Reigns wasn't happy with that. Jimmy Uso super kicks Roman Reigns. And this is where this a lot of people were saying that after WrestleMania, of course, the Bloodline was kind of petering on now because it should have been Cody Rhodes and winning the title and ending the Bloodline at that point, finishing his story. But we've now went back into another gear. There was a little bit of a lull, letting people just settling at this development that Roman Reigns is still going to be the Universal World Heavyweight Champion, whatever you want to call it. And now we're kicking back up again just in time for, I don't know, maybe Roman Reigns versus Jimmy Uso at Money in the Bank. We've still got unfinished business with Jey Uso and Roman Reigns. There's so much still left in this Roman Reigns title run. And even now, well, you're going to see it in 2 weeks when Roman Reigns goes past 434 days as WWE champion and beating that old guy, CM Punk's record. It's going to be a very interesting time, and it's really the Roman Reigns empire is still going strong, and it's going to be very interesting to see how this develops now.
It's a credit to everybody involved in the whole Bloodline saga that it's gone on so long and it's kept the momentum and the attention for so long. You know, obviously there was a post WrestleMania lull with it, but the match at Night of Champions at the weekend was just unreal. The drama, the soap opera of it all was just immense. And even going into it, you knew that there was going to be shenanigans. You knew the Usos were going to get involved at some point. And you know, the going for the double super kick and Sammy, who was over like that. That was the action that Sami Zayn got. But you know, speaking Arabic, you know, he obviously has, you know, difficult political affiliation and all that that goes on with him going to Saudi Arabia. Then he come out to such a rapturous applause, and then be you know the focal point of that double super kick that takes out Solo, and then you've got the drama of Jimmy coming in and just blittering the head off Roman as well, and all the aftermath of it. It was so well done, so well done. And it's just continuing the fact that the Bloodline is the best story in wrestling going at the minute.
Absolutely. And think of all the things that's happened this weekend with your Double or Nothing, with your NXT Battleground. And I can tell you as a fan anyway, when Sami Zayn came out in his robe and he had the belt and that reaction, I've been watching wrestling for 20 years now, and I have a tear in my eye watching Sami Zayn enter. It was just amazing.
Yeah, I didn't watch all of Night of Champions. I did get into watching that match because I heard of what's happening. I actually got a wee bit emotional seeing him come out with the full robe on and getting that big reaction, because I know as you said, Chris, that whole political affiliation, you would almost felt that he was cast aside almost for that when that was going on. And now to bring him in and see him get that reaction and then get that massive pop when he was speaking Arabic in an introduction was brilliant to see.
It was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. And it just, where it goes from here, there's so many branches, so many little ways that it could go. You know, we could very well end up seeing, you know, Roman still being champion in a year's time. We could see Jimmy take it off him. We could see Jay take it off him. We could see Solo take it off him as well. There's so much still left to be told in that story. And for that reason, that's why that Billy, you are going to get the front page with the headline, the Bloodline Flatlines and Blood Money Beauty is what I'm going to give the headline of that one there. So we'll move on to the back page now. Now, we spoke about, you know, the biggest news stories, biggest and best news stories of the week, but this for the back page is going to be the most entertaining match, the action that drew us in and spat us out very, very happy at the end of it. So coming to you on this one first, Billy, what would your pick for match of the week be?
I'm fairly certain I know what my competitor here is going to choose, but I'm going to pick... I watched All Night Champions, I watched a bit of Battleground, but for me, AJ Styles, Seth Rollins. They opened the show at Night of Champions, had a point to prove, and they went out and proved that there's two more important matches when it comes to a wrestling show. There's the main event, and then there's your opening match. And even though they didn't get the main event, they wrestled like it was the main event. Yeah. And even though the championship, questionable in its motive, why it's there, they certainly made it count. This is the inaugural match for that belt, and they wrestled like it was the biggest prize on that show.
Yep. I mean, AJ came out the other week there in an interview and deemed it as a secondary title. But the showing that he showed out with on Saturday, he didn't approach it as if it was a secondary title. He went for it. He went hard to try and win that. And I think, you know, across the weekend, I found that there was a lot of matches that had great moments and great spots in it. But bell to bell, I thoroughly enjoyed watching that with my dinner on Saturday night, which is something that you very rarely are able to do with a WWE show.
Absolutely. Yeah, I loved it. Like I said, political things aside, I don't mind a Saudi show because it starts at 7 and I get to go to bed before 10. And as a father of a 10-month-old, I will take that every day.
Yeah, but you can't beat it, especially, you know, the older they get, if there's that chance for you to watch the shows with your kids. You know, I had my daughter Evie, she was watching it. I took her to the WWE show in Belfast a few weeks ago, and she is now besotted with Seth Rollins. I don't know if it's mainly because there'll be brothers called Seth as well, but she sat at peace and she watched, and she was, you know, she was getting right into the match with AJ the other night there as well. Do you think that the decision to put the belt on Seth as opposed to AJ was the right one to do? Do you think that was the right way to go?
Yes, because AJ's just came back from injury. I think he still needs, as much as it would have been cool to see AJ win it, and then he would have had to obviously hop to Raw, and then the rest of the OC would have just floated into obscurity as they seemed to have done when he was injured. Seth has been the most consistent when it comes to getting a reaction. And of course, he's going to be taking time away if he's doing Captain America 4, but as long as his Mondays are open, then we're still going to get back, like, I was going to use bangers, like I'm a teenager, but we're going to get bangers and matches every Monday regardless. So yeah, he's going to take time off because of Captain America 4, which I'm excited for, but he's going to be there consistently every Monday with that belt. And he's getting the biggest reactions in the room outside of Sammy, outside of Roman. He is there as a guy that Cody as well, of course, with the big woes. But yeah, when it comes to crowd reaction, Seth's been in a title for years now, and he has been and he's the only guy really that's beaten Roman 1-on-1. It was by DQ, but win counts.
Yeah, and Steve, obviously, you know, Seth's got a lot going for them at the moment. What do you see AJ Styles' future as, you know, over on SmackDown? Do you think he's going to get involved in any of the Bloodline stuff? Is that a potential? Do you think they'll transition him to the Intercontinental stuff against Gunther? How do you play that?
Either way, I think AJ is going to be fine. Like, it's AJ Styles. He's one of the best wrestlers of the past 25 years. He's going to be fine. I'm not even saying he's probably one of the very few main event guys that's yet to challenge Roman.
I think he might be right. I don't remember him.
Yeah, so you would think that's at least someone that they've got there to fill a bit of time until they eventually decide on who's going to be the guy that dethrones him. I don't think it would be much as good as AJ Styles as it would make sense for it to be him to dethrone Roman. So, but you know, I think he is deserving of a match against Roman, maybe against. Maybe it's SummerSlam, maybe further down the line, something like Hell in a Cell, or one of those.
I would say that's your solid Royal Rumble match. That's your solid Royal Rumble match.
There you go. That's a good solid Royal Rumble main event. But you also mentioned Gunther. That would be a barn burner. I would love that because AJ would sell like crazy for Gunther. I'm one of my favourite recent WWE matches was Survivor Series 2018. I want to say AJ against Brock, the champion versus champion match, and that was a belter of a match. And I could see that a Gunther AJ match being something along the similar veins, because AJ can just sell like crazy for Gunther.
And again, you've got AJ and the OC against Gunther and the rest of the Imperium as well. So there's loads of new branch-offs that you can get with that. And what about yourself, Steve? Outside of WWE, I think you're going to probably go down the Double or Nothing route here, but what would be your match of the week to adorn the back page of the Daft Sheet?
Well, my match was also for a world title, but ain't no secondary one. It's the Triple B, baby, the AEW World Championship. And of course, the Four Pillars match, Four Corners match between Sammy Guevara, Jungle Boy, Darby Allin, and the champ MJF. And my God, what a bright match! The storytelling on here was fantastic. Taking a lot of notes, I'll try and be brief as I can with it. But MJF, man. Just when you think they can't do any more to impress you, he just does it again. It's just the wee things, like his facial expressions in every match, so the way he growls, the way he shouts and complains, swears at the referee, you know, making noise at all times, you know, shouting at the fans. It's just brilliant. He's non-stop. The energy he's got is phenomenal. And, you know, he's in there with three guys that, yes, there's a lot to be refined with those guys. They can be perceived as just flippy guys, but that doesn't mean that what they do isn't worth seeing. It's just brilliant, you know. It's almost hard to know where to begin with it, because it's just a brilliant action-packed match. Stuff that pointed out as well was, I'll tell you what my favourite spot was actually, was the four guys actually hitting their mentor's finishers. That was
the only well done.
Aye, Darby did Sting's death drop, Jungle Boy did Christian's
kill switch,
aye, and you know, and MJF did Cody's move, which is brilliant. It was just brilliant to see.
I think Sally did the walls of Jericho, because
Darby also did the Scorpion Deathlock later on as well. That was another great spot. MJF looked like he was actually about to tap, and Jungle Boy grabbed his hand and says, "No, you don't. No, you will not." Like, that was another great spot. I just loved
the bit with the four of them all in the four way submission move as well.
Yeah,
you know, was it like a snare trap, and they were all basically one big knot in the middle of the ring. At one point, it was really cool.
Yeah, I know. I know a lot of people would say it was just another glorified indie spot fest with blatantly planned spots. And okay, there's a bit of proof to that. There were one too many Canadian destroyers for my liking. But like, it was four guys going out there, still very young. Let's not forget that we're talking about the future of AEW here, going out all out and proving why they're main eventers and why they're going to be the guys that carry this company for the next 5 to 10 years, and they did a superb job. The thing I want to finish on was the ending was brilliant. MJF getting the belt and putting it on Sammy as Darby was doing the coffin drop, and then landing his head right on the belt, knocking him out, and then to add insult to injury, MJF for the second time does the headlock takeover to Darby. So he's pinned him now twice using a headlock takeover. And that's, you know, got to really piss Darby off, kayfabe wise. And it's got me thinking, is that the seed being planted for Darby to be the guy that dethrones MJF? And is he going to do it with a headlock takedown?
I will answer that with my opinion, which I think is no. as much as I enjoyed that match as well, I just didn't feel like it was for the World Heavyweight Championship match. I did really enjoy it. I enjoyed a lot of the spots. I enjoyed the build to it as well. But I just think MJF is the only one of those four that is ready and deserves to be carrying the title.
I think that's what was the problem with the match as well. Who, as much as great as it was, we all knew MJF was not losing that match.
Yep. And again, you know, in the press conference afterwards, MJF was, you know, as usual, running his mouth, talking about maybe going to WWE as well. As tonight's designated WWE fan, Billy, would you like to see MJF in the Fed?
Before I get to that, just because I know there's going to be some nerds that will grumble at you about this, but Imperium are on Raw, AJ's on SmackDown, so just in case. Get Survivor Series, absolutely. Dethrone Theory and we'll get Styles and Gunther at Survivor Series. Anyway, but MJF and WWE, I'm saving your back here, Chris, because I know there's going to be some nerd that will like that.
If that's the worst they've got to come after me for, then happy days, Billy. Happy days.
MJF and WWE, though. From what I've seen, as I said, my very limited time watching AEW, when I have watched it, I'm mostly a GIF watcher when it comes to AEW, which is what they seem to go for, so it works. He can talk. I would just be interested to see, he seems to have a lot of creative freedom to say what he wants and swear and do all that kind of stuff. I don't know, there would be a big adjustment period for him to rein in MJF, but keep the MJF aura at the same time. And I'm sure he could probably do that. If he's got guys that are there already, like your Cody, we'd probably be telling him, right, this is how it would work. This would be the system. This is how you would kind of fit in if you do this kind of thing. So I've no doubt, even was he 25, 26, something like that?
He's still young.
So he's still ridiculously young, and by the time he's 30, he's probably going to be world champion, and well, probably hasn't dethroned Roman Reigns, he'll still be going strong. But everyone's got the potential in the world, as long as he goes in with the right attitude and tries and doesn't just go in thinking he'll just be MJF. He'll might have to adjust, and he's young, sure he can, why not?
The sky is the limit. So with that in mind, for the back page, I think I am going to go with you, Steve, on this one. I think we're going to go with the fourth pillars. And, you know, putting my bit of opinion into the headline here, I'm going to give this one the headline: Pillars Credit All Maxed Out. Max for the MJF, obviously. Because I think that, you know, of the four of them, the only one with the proper upside is MJF. But that's just me taking editorial control of that. Now, speaking of editorial, this is the part where Steve and Billy are going to take a break, and you are going to hear me conduct a fairly awkward interview with a former NXT UK star, that being Myla Grace. Now, Myla Grace is, you know, a good friend of mine. When I was doing this, you know, coming up with this podcast, I thought, you know, I'll call in a favour and see who I can get to come on. And luckily enough, Myla Grace, who is pictured behind me in my Zoom profile here kicking me in the head. I had my first ever singles match as a wrestler against Myla. And I spoke with her a couple of weeks ago about, you know, what it was like being part of NXT UK, how she's adapted to working in the indies across Europe. And there's also a bit of awkward chat at the start of it about how she got to the office, we were recording it in. So I have absolutely no doubt that once NXT Europe's back up and running, Myla Grace is probably going to be one of the females at the forefront of the Fed's dip into Europe. But for the next 10 minutes, she is at the forefront of this podcast. So here is me speaking with Myla Grace. So, Myla Grace, thanks for coming along. How did you get here today?
Like, how did I physically get to the studio today? Like,
what was your travel routine this morning getting here?
Well, I got the car, dropped my dog off at my in-law's house, and then got the sat nav ready and drove here. Very little hours. I found it like pretty smoothly-ish for me.
Even though my directions put you in the wrong car park.
Yeah. I did try and go in the wrong car park and I had to reverse out very awkwardly and almost didn't make it in, but I got here in the end, so.
Is that how you, like, you would normally get about? You'd normally like drive places? Like, what, when you are like saying you're going to like training or shows or anything you're driving to, like, do you use that time to kind of get your head together, get in the mindset, or is it just that you're relaxing time?
When I drive, I usually try and use that time to listen to music that like either gets me like super pumped up or motivated, or like in like a really good mood. Or sometimes I'll just have no music and I will cut promos to myself. And sometimes I get weird looks from the people in the cars next to me. But I like being on my own in the car. So I hate actually driving, but I do enjoy having that like time to myself to just sing or cut promos to myself without judgment.
So if you were driving along today and you get stopped at like lights for the ages and ages, what kind of promo would you be cutting? What would you be?
I wouldn't be cutting a promo on the lights. I would just, sometimes when I start driving, I would think of like a scenario in wrestling and I'm like, right, okay, this is real life, you know, go for it, you know, talk about the situation. So I'll just like make up that, like, I don't know, maybe I have like a certain match or something coming up, and then I'll just go in on that person and cut a promo on it. So yeah, not on the traffic lights. That's weird. I'm not that weird.
Do you ever like pull inspiration for cutting promos from the likes of, you know, if you were like stuck in traffic or someone cut you up, would that kind of, would you call on that kind of feeling that you had and put that into a promo, you know?
I've had times where when I've been driving and people haven't been the nicest drivers, and I've definitely let a few lines slip on them, but I usually can never really recycle it back into wrestling because it's probably some granny and then I feel really bad afterwards.
And, you know, if you're driving here to City Keys or driving to a show or anything like that, if you're using that time to practice, then, you know, that's, you know, it's showing you how in tune you are with yourself as a wrestler. You know, the fact that you're bringing that into the smallest parts of your day.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm probably sometimes a bit, like, too obsessed with what I do. Like, literally everything that I do throughout my day somehow is deep down like trying to benefit my wrestling in some way, whether it's like going to the gym or even if like I'm meditating. Like, everything I do is in some way to better me or get me further in my wrestling career. Like, it's literally like everything that I do.
And it's certainly worked, because you've managed to make it pretty much as far as anyone would expect you to do, making it all the way to the WWE with NXT UK, and you had a really good concentrated amount of time there before unfortunately being future endeavoured in then about August last year. What was it like for you as a performer to go from the highs of being part of the WWE to being let go and not know what your future in wrestling would be?
Obviously, it was really sad. I loved going to London and I loved all the people I met, and I loved training with WWE and all the experiences. It was amazing. But I really do believe that everything happens for a reason, and that this time off is just giving me all these other opportunities outside, so that when the day comes that I go back, that I'm even better than before, that I'm I'm going to be the main, I'm not just a WWE superstar, that I'm going to be the superstar.
Yeah.
And I really do believe that, even though it's been hard and there's some days where, you know, I feel a bit sad and I'm like, oh, I really wish that I was here. I do know that it's all just part of the process and that I'm just on the journey of becoming who I need, who I want to be. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't want to just be someone else on the roster. I want to be a top star. So I just believe that it's just the journey and the helping me create that star that I want to be.
And the fact that, you know, Myla Grace has the WWE you know, name attached to you as a wrestler than as a character, what kind of other loads has that affiliation been able to take you on? You know, I know that you've wrestled, you know, across Europe and you're over in Scotland and England quite regularly. Like, what's that experience been like for you? You know, sort of being still able to make a living off of the WWE name, so to speak.
Well, I was very fortunate because loads of people are like, how, you know, can you give me some advice on how to get bookings here and there? And I'm like, I didn't actually do anything. Like, these people have just came to me. Like, when WWE was coming to an end, I was invited to go to Poland. And then when I was in Poland, they were talking to me about how they have this really big show and they bring all these massive stars from around the world. And I just remember thinking, I'm going to make sure that I make such a good impression because I want to be on this big show. So then I was getting to do Poland and then Italy, and they just kept asking me, and France, and I think I ended up doing like 10 countries in the space of like 6 months or something.
Wow.
It was very, very tiring, but it was amazing. I was getting to see all these amazing cities and meet these amazing people, and it's given me a lot more experience in wrestling. So every time that I wrestle, I do believe that I'm better each time. So mm-hmm. I think, like, from the last time I was on WWE TV to now, I'm like a whole different gravy. Like, I'm so much better. But it has opened so much doors for me. Like, I've been wrestling every weekend, multiple times a weekend. Like, there's some weekends where I have like a few promoters asking, and I have to either pick, you know, what's the best option, or else I'll go to one country and fly from that country to the next, and then I'll be sick the rest of the week because I'm run down. But I wouldn't change it for the world. I'm just feeling very, very lucky.
And are the promoters and all these like European promotions, how accommodating are they, you know, of getting you into, you know, say Poland and then going to like Italy or Spain or whatever? Like, do they assist you like in terms of like booking flights for you and accommodation and things, or is that very much left up to yourself and you kind of like
they would usually book it all for me? I have had occasions, like the companies that I've worked with regularly, I'm like, can I book the flights so I can pick flights that are the best option? But mostly they do it for me, so I don't really have to worry about it too much, which is great.
Cool. And in terms of the, you know, traveling between sort of like Germany, Poland, everywhere that you've been, do you find that there's a sort of a universal language of wrestling? Because obviously you're going up against people from different countries, maybe don't speak English, or maybe you don't speak their languages, that kind of thing. How easy is it to put matches together with people that don't speak the same language as you?
Sometimes it's quite difficult when they don't have any English at all, but sometimes they usually have like enough, and if not, you can always like say, oh, you know, this move that this wrestler does, and then it'll click, because we all know like WWE and we all know their wrestlers. So if you say, oh, you know what, the Kevin Owens, and then they'll know what move I'm talking about, or, you know,
breaking out stunners and top up sentons and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's never been my scenario, as much as I love Kevin Owens. We are very different wrestlers, but you know what I mean? You can usually like say, oh, a wrestler, and then they'll know. Yeah. I know what move you're talking about. So it is kind of universal in that sense, but the in-betweens, it can be hard when you're just trying to put some certain things together, but it usually works out fine in the end. It's just a little bit tougher than obviously speaking to someone who has the same accent as you.
Yeah. And do you find as well, like, I know that like some of the promotions that you've worked for across Europe, like SIW in Italy, have you done WXW in Germany yet?
No, not yet.
How does performing in those shows differ from the NXT UK stuff that you did? What are the, like, how do the show days differ?
Actually, SIW is a lot tougher than what WWE is, believe it or not. We usually go to there. They have like a training facility. You're usually there from like 9 a.m. and you're there all day, and sometimes you're taping like three shows. and you have very little sleep. So I've actually found SIW is a lot tougher than WWE, but most of the other promotions that I do, usually, you know, you'll get there midday and you can get ready at the hotel and come, or else get ready while you're there, and it's usually a lot more chill than what it would be. But SIW, they're a bad example because their days are crazy, but usually it's a lot easier, and then after the show you can maybe go and see the city and try their, you know, their famous cuisine and stuff, and that's what I'm all about. I love food, so.
That was Myla Grace. Big thank you to her for coming on this maiden episode of the Daft Sheet. And if you're a fan of Myla Grace, you can probably find her matches on the WWE Network if NXT UK is still on there. If you are a fan of international wrestling, she's been on OTT shows over the last weekend, and there's probably a video of her kicking me in the dish somewhere on YouTube as well. So we will crack on with the next pages of the Daft Sheet, and the one that we're looking to fill just now is the one that would usually set boys of a certain age's hearts aflutter. It's page 3, and we are looking for the most titillating and juiciest bits of gossip to fill that this week. So I'll start with you on this one, Steve. What is your juiciest bit of gossip to put in the paper?
Well, another big development or big happening from the fallout of Double or Nothing was the shock of Chris Statlander returning and winning the TBS title from Jade Cargill. Now, the rumour mill has it that it's been planned for some time that Chris was going to win the title from Cargill. I'm delighted for her, and it's the one that makes the most sense because I think she was the one that was always presented as having the most threat for Jade, and she's a big fan favourite as well, so I was really happy to see that happening. But there's further kind of developments or plans in place for this. Bigger things are really getting planned for Jade Cargill. Apparently, TBS loves her. TBS being the network that carries AEW in the States, and they really want AEW to push the boat out for her to the point that she may even become the face of AEW, maybe even more so than MJF, because it makes sense. She's so marketable. She's really charismatic as well. I think it's had a professional dance background she's got or something like that. I think she used to also be a cheerleader for the Chicago Bulls or something like that as well. So she's got all this kind of athletic background. But top of that, I only found this out from watching the pay-per-view on Sunday. She's actually married with a daughter.
Yeah, her daughter's at quite a lot of the shows. There's been a few times. I think it's been like every 10th win in her streak. She's
something like that, yeah.
With a kid or something.
Yeah, so she's also got that marketability. Like, there's an inspirational story there. She's a working mother who became a professional wrestler. You can imagine, like, if they're making a documentary about her, like a behind-the-scenes thing or a reality show, that's the kind of thing that they'll market with her. So I think inevitably we're going to see a lot more Jade Cargill. I think she'll be maybe the women's champion by Wembley. Fightful Select have said that she's actually going to take a bit of a break for a month. Yeah. I think that's a good thing for her, you know, give her a wee bit of break to heal from losing the title. There's also with Forbidden Door coming up as well. The whole New Japan influx, it's best to maybe have her out the way for a wee bit. And then when we build up towards All In Wembley, I think she's going to take full charge of getting the women's title. And I think when she does get it, it could happen at Wembley, and she's probably going to hold it for a long time. And I'd love that, because you're talking about feuds with Jamie Hayter, with Shida, with, you know, the big one, of course, would be Britt Baker. That one's got money written all over it. The promos alone will be fucking brilliant.
Aye. I mean, like, it's no secret that the women's divisions in AEW don't get the promotion that they probably should be getting. You know, they've tried with the All Access show to make Britt Baker, you know, a bit more relevant. But again, yeah. On the main show that the majority of fans watch, they're still only getting, you know, one segment, one match a week on there. With Jade, she definitely does have the upside. I still think, I mean, she's 60-0, but I mean, how many of those have been squashes? How many of those have been upper competitive matches? And maybe that's what's stopped her from being in food so far with the likes of Britt and Saraya and the more established women on there. I mean, she's definitely a powerhouse. She's definitely marketable. You know, strong, independent black women as the face of any company on US television is always going to be a plus point.
I think as well, they've seen the success WWE's had with Bianca Belair, and I think they want to replicate that a wee bit as well.
Yeah.
And if they can sign Mercedes Moné and get them in a feud, Jesus Christ, that's got millions written on it.
Yep. And again, looking at Chris Statlander as well, you know, from a slightly odd introduction to AEW, with her, you know, coming in as an alien and aligning herself with Best Friends and everything like that, to being someone that the fans really, really got behind at Double or Nothing. You know, it'll be interesting to see where she takes that and the kind of feuds that she gets into. Is she going to be wondering about...
She got the pop of the night.
Sorry?
She got the pop of the night.
I should get a huge pop. Aye. Huge pop. But again, when as a babyface champion, you know, there's a good run of heels that she can be going up against. But do you want her going up against the likes of, you know, Layla Gray, Red Velvet, all that kind of mob? Or would you rather see her going up against the likes of, you know, the Outcasts, the Bray Wyatt, Britt?
Thunder Rosa's back.
Thunder Rosa, all that kind of thing. It's interesting. And what about yourself, Billy? Going from AEW, I'm assuming back to WWE here, what would you say has been the juiciest and most titillating bit of gossip this week?
Well, I don't think I'm going to top that, because that's a solid pick. That's a really good pick. I did have a pick planned out, which is the one I'm going to use first, because that's what I'm going to put forward. But Alexa Bliss and Ryan Cabrera really swooping in with the big news before we've hit record here.
Oh, don't break my heart.
Baby on the way in December.
Don't break my heart.
I know.
I've missed this. I briefly saw a message Stephen sent me earlier saying that he was going to be in mourning because of this news, but I've missed out on the full announcement. Oh, so what was it there, Billy?
Well, again, it's not my pick, but I'll just briefly say it. It's December 2023. Alexa Bliss and Ryan Cabrera are expecting their first child.
Ah, congratulations to Cabrera Blisses.
I've said Alexa.
Gosh.
We've set her off.
Cool. Right, okay, that's a shout now. But my actual pick, like I said, it's not going to top that, I think, but it's the rumour mill going around that before Dakota Kai's injury, they were going to be reforming Team Kick, which the tag team division in the women's division in WWE, it flounders very, very often. And with the fact that it looks like we're going to see Io Shirai and Bayley at some point, split off in Damage Control to face each other, because there seems to be some tension there. To see Dakota Kai and Tegan Knox actually doing something as well, and seeing Team Kick reunite, I thought that was quite a nice little story. But unfortunately, it's not to be right now, because Dakota Kai is injured, and it sounds like a pretty nasty injury. I don't know what it is exactly, but it should be out for a while. But I just thought it was very interesting that it seems to be there is plans in place to start making actual teams reform and come back together and try and make something of this cursed WWE women's tag team division. Just a nice little story that I throw in. But yeah, it's going to be Jade. I know, I'm very aware it's going to be Jade Cargill that's going to be in the Page 3 section, which is absolutely fair, because look at her.
I think, you know, the word that you used there, cursed, I think that is very apt for the women's tag division, because it just seems like that. Anytime it feels like anyone in it's building up some sort of momentum, it just gets taken away for whatever reason. whether that's injury, whether it's, you know, everything that went on with Naomi and Sasha last year. Obviously, Liv Morgan, she was really, really needing, you know, something, you know, off the back of quite a wet fart of a championship run last year, of towards the end of last year. She was really needing something to build her back up. Now she's injured. Tegan Knox and Dakota Kai, you know, it's a great pairing. We've seen in the past it's a great pairing. But again, you know, obviously Dakota's injured just now. With Tegan Knox's injury history as well, how long is she going to stay fit? Is she going to be able to stay relevant while Dakota's away? You know, all that sort of stuff, it all plays into it. But I do like the way that they have been pairing the teams up recently. I'm quite interested to see where this Sonya Deville and Chelsea Green combination goes. I like Chelsea Green's sort of Karen type character, and it's just one of those annoying ones that it just gets to you, like kind of like, you know, with the Maximum Male Models as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I hadn't seen much of them.
Still doing that.
It's still going on. It was one of the most over things at the Belfast WWE show the other week there, because they came out just after the interval and said they were going to do a 5-minute pause, and they just stood in the ring stock still for 3.5 minutes until Alpha Academy came out. Is it still Alpha Academy? Can't remember. But until they came out.
I love Alpha Academy, they're class.
But the boos that they were getting from everyone and stuff like that, it was good. And I could probably see Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville being that kind of antagonistic, smart arse, smug kind of team there as well. Obviously we hope that Dakota recovers from her injury, comes back, and Team Kick can come in and kick arse. But unfortunately, Billy, I'm going to give Page 3 to Steve on this occasion. And the headline that we're going to go with for this one is Jade kisses TBS title goodbye.
That's a great one.
So we're going to go with that.
And congratulations, Alexa and
really
Ryan.
Good one. I've just remembered that I had a really good headline if I had gone with the Don Callis and Takeshita stuff. And it was Konsuke and Callis take a shitter on the Elite. but it didn't make the cut, unfortunately. So what we'll do is we'll now move on to one of the first things that anybody goes to the newspaper for, or used to do back in the 90s when I used to deliver the newspapers, which was the television pages. What are the most wrestling-related things that our listeners of the Daft Sheet should go out and seek to put in their eyeballs this week? Billy, I'll come to you first. What would you say is the most must-see wrestling-related thing of the week?
I think I'm cheating here with my pick, to be perfectly honest with you, because there's a little movie that's number one in the cinema. I don't know if it's probably number two now behind. You can still use Fast X, maybe. It's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, of course, with Big Dave Bautista as Drax. It is the most beautiful ending of a trilogy of films you may ever see. Yeah. And I'm watching back Volume 1 and 2 now for another podcast I'm doing shortly. And it's just it's a wonderful trilogy. And especially Big Dave at the moment, he's getting a lot of plaudits for being an actor. And not what The Rock's doing, or even what John Cena is doing very well. What he's doing, Peacemaker is amazing. Mm-hmm. And The Rock's getting a lot of shit at the moment because I watched Black Adam a couple of days. I didn't finish Black Adam a couple of days ago, I should say, because it was so bad. And he's, of course, he's returned in Fast X. Sorry, spoilers, folks. Sorry. But Guardians Volume 3, amazing film, beautiful film. And Batista as Drax has been a wonderful part of that series, and everyone should go see it. They should go watch all the Guardians films. Yeah, you don't need to watch the rest of the MCU stuff. You can watch the trilogy, and you'll be quite you'll still understand all the stories. So
I concur. You know, it's the best Marvel film. It's been out in ages, and it's so refreshing to see one where it's not tied up with the other Phase 4, Phase 5, Phase 50, whatever phase they're now on, shit tied in it. They long last let James Gunn just do what he's good at, and just tell a story with all the characters that he's got.
There was a theory that I'd seen the other day. Now, I've only seen the first two. I only watched the second one about 2 weeks ago. And again, very impressed with Dave Bautista. I love that he's got was it he's he does famously massive turds. Is that the quote?
Yes, he does.
And his whole pseudo on the spectrum character as well, like they can't tell like social cues and stuff when he's calling is it Mantis or Mantra, whatever her name is, when he keeps basically calling her a dog to her face, you know. Just I loved that, but understanding the character and that he's not a sociable person at all, and he just kind of says it no filter, but not in the kind of, you know, offensive boomer type way of having no filter. I just think it's a good thing. But the theory that I'd seen the other day was that Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is an allegory for the way that Marvel have treated James Gunn.
That wouldn't surprise me.
So right. Basically, again, I don't really know the storyline of the film, but it's basically James Gunn is Rocket.
I know what you're referring to, aye.
And basically, they need to get Rocket, the powers that be or whoever that is, they need to get Rocket back to make things right again. Is basically the summary of this theory. But they're basically saying that they needed to, that Marvel needed to bring James Gunn back to make everything right with Guardians of the Galaxy franchise again.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense.
It's a bold theory, and you could probably correlate it quite well with it. So yeah, I can see where people could draw that conclusion. But yeah, it's nobody else could have made that third film. They couldn't have got anyone. It had to be James Gunn because he knows these characters so well.
I think he's now cemented his status as the greatest ever superhero filmmaker.
I would agree, and what he's gonna, I'm actually excited to watch a DC film now that he's at the helm of the DC universe. Because I mean, the last few, I haven't seen the new Shazam yet. I assume it's not going to be good, but okay, cool, that's fine. But there's only been one film I've liked in the DC universe. I like the Suicide Squad. That's a lie. So two, the Suicide Squad I liked because it was a James Gunn, because it's clearly a James Gunn film, and the first Shazam. That's about it. So
does Batman and Robin, is it in the DC universe, you know, the Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jim Carrey? Is that part of the DC canon?
It's got my favourite ever non-factual line. What could the dinosaurs, the Ice Age? No, it wasn't Arnold, it was the asteroid.
Well, on that, Stephen, we'll come to you. What would be your pick of the stuff that we need to be watching that's wrestling related, but not necessarily wrestling? Why did I try and say that? That's a fucking terrible sentence to try and say.
Non-wrestling related wrestling.
Non-wrestling related, but not necessarily wrestling. Aye.
Okay. So it's a podcast. It's called Behind the Bastards. And it's a very popular one. It's about, as you imagine, bastards all throughout history: Hitler, Stalin. Really delves deep into those persons' history, the acts and crimes they committed, their early life, delving into why they became the person they did. They've also done ones on Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, all the social media arseholes that are ruining our lives with their capitalist agenda, etc. Was this to do with wrestling? Well, right now they're doing a series on the one and only Mr. Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
Awesome.
Yeah, but it's a six-parter. They've got one more episode to go. Episode 5, which I've not listened to yet, just got launched this morning, and they've done a great job on it. They've really factually checked it, and they've brought to light things that I didn't know about Vince. It's just when you think you've heard it all, there's more stuff that's been brought to light. You know, they also, you know, shine a light on wrestling as a whole. Just all the fucked up shit that's happened, but they also delve deep into the history of the lesson, how wrestling came to be the way it is, stuff like the Territories era, as well. But like the like stuff I didn't know about Vince was like, do you know he was actually in a broken home. He only actually changed his name. His first, I want to say, 17 years of his life, he actually went by a different name.
Oh, cool.
He didn't change it to McMahon until he started
Was it
working for his dad.
Beelzebub?
I fucking something along that lines, but he was basically his mum was in a really bad marriage with this guy, and then Vince, when he was old enough, he went to military school for a bit, got kicked out because he was acting a dafty, and then he went to went tracked down his dad, worked for him a wee bit in the WWF. That's when he retook the name McMahon, and I found out that his favorite wrestler, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was a fucking lunatic as they all were back then. He was Superstar Billy Graham's older brother. He was a guy that he rode around in a Harley, always with a leather jacket unfastened and no t-shirt on. So he just traveled about everywhere, fucking topless, basically, and smoking a cigar, picking up chicks. And Vince would always ride in the back with him. So this is the guy that he basically learned his trade from.
Awesome. And you say that's a six part of that, eh?
Yep.
Is it on YouTube or is it on
You get it
just
on Spotify, you can get it on Apple Podcasts. I think it's on YouTube as well, but I only ever listened to it audibly, but I'm sure they've got a YouTube there. It's a big it's one of the like the it's up there with like Joe Rogan is like one of the big podcasts that comes out weekly.
And outside of Vince McMahon, what other wrestling bastards would you like to find out more about on those podcasts?
They mention Fritz von Erich.
I thought you were going to say Fritzl there, and I was like, that would be a really, really interesting
I think they did one of
dive
him
into
actually.
Joseph Fritzl's wrestling history. That'd be amazing.
I'm pretty sure they did one in him, but
Travel in World of Sport, so I was like, oh God, this could go all wrong.
They actually brought up Vince on I was Fritz von Erich on part two, I want to say, of the Vince podcast. Like, what a fucking scumbag he was. He treated his sons horribly. Well, I also would like to see them do one because they've got that movie that's coming out about
Aye.
the Von Erich family soon with Zac Efron. MJF's got a small role in as well, so that's going to hit the mainstream. I can't remember what it's going to be on. I want to say Amazon Prime, I think it's doing it. That's going to carry it here.
Aye.
I need to
No, I'm
recheck that.
looking forward to that film as well. I think it'll
Aye.
be really interesting. Because Texas Tornado is one of the first wrestlers that I ever kind of became
Aye.
attached to from SummerSlam 90. It's Mr.
Indeed.
Perfect Intercontinental title. That's
And it's through this podcast I found out something really messed up. Do you know that he had a prosthetic foot?
yes.
Do you know that Fritz, his dad, ordered it to drove him to a hospital, got a prosthetic emergency, like an emergency prosthetic put on, and made his son still go out and wrestle that night?
That's
Because
commitment, isn't it?
it was because he had a sold out show and he was billed as the main event, but Kerry was fucking off his tits and painkillers because of it, and he still made him go out and wrestle.
God, it was sold out and his soul was out as well. That's
Yeah.
all that makes me think of is, you know, on Scottish Tweets, and there's a video of the boy with the prosthetic climbing the climbing wall, and
Yes.
just a wee boy at the bottom. Here, pal, your legs fell off. Love it. Like that, it just makes me think of that. But anyway, enough
Oh,
of my mad head about prosthetics. I think in terms of what I would most like to watch, you know, I like to watch stuff that's uplifting and funny and stuff. I don't think I'm gonna get that, unfortunately, Steve, with a thing about bastards.
yeah.
But I'll go with Guardians of the Galaxy. So Billy, you
Yeah.
get the top pick
I can't
us.
be mad by that. It's a great movie.
So what we're going to finish on is Dear Dafties, where the two yous are going to turn into an agony aunt to help one of our wrestling related listeners deal with a a problem, just like they do in Dear Deirdre. There's no photo casebook, unfortunately. It is just the letter that's come in. And this week's letter reads like this. Dear Dafties, last year I left my partner to get back with my ex. It was a tough decision, but at the time it felt right for me. And for the last 12 months or so, I've been on top of the world. We had a real purple patch about 6 months in, before I had to spend some time away from her. We rekindled things in January, and all was going well until around March, when I seemed to have misread the signals I was getting from her. This past weekend, I tried to get back in her good books, but try as I might, I've been left feeling like I've let her down again. Was I wrong to go back to my ex, or do you think if I persevere enough, our relationship will become a triumph? Will become a triumph eventually. Yours, the grandson of a plumber. So, our letter writer of this week, they are maybe having a bit of buyer's remorse in terms of going back to where they once were. Billy, I'll come to you first. What would your advice be to our problem-laden writer?
Well, I've never been through it myself, so I can't really speak from experience, but it's perseverance. That's got to be the thing. There's going to be people that come and go in their life. There's going to be opportunities possibly that they could go towards that could make or break the situation. But the story's got to end. The story is going to be, they're going to complete each chapter as they go. And the ex, if they love them, if the ex loves them, if they love the ex, then the story will be complete and there'll be a fairy tale ending. So perseverance, sir. Perseverance.
And yourself, Steve, what advice would you give?
You make your bed, you sleep in it. Simple as that, son. Look, the grass ain't always green on the other side, and it seemed to me that the partner you had before rejoining with your ex was giving you a lot. Seems like she gave you a lot of freedom, a lot of creative control, shall we say. And she seemed to have got you, and she was also, you know, pushing you out there. And she was spoiling you with a lot as well. But you wanted to go back. Why? Was it to prove a point? Was it to complete a story, as you say? Well, the ex that you've returned to, I don't think they care about that story. I think that they've only taken you back because they like being in control of you, and they're quite, I'm going to be brutally honest here, a bit selfish. And I'm sorry to say, I think you've made the wrong choice, and you're going to need to deal with it the best way you can. Hey, I like you. I hope you're happy. I hope you have all the success that you want. But I'm very sorry, but you made the wrong move. Oh, and by the way, I heard that your new ex, she's got a big trip planned in London that you were going to be a big part of. And that's something you're going to miss very dearly now.
Some wise words from you there, Stephen. Some wise words. I think, though, I am on the side of Billy here. I think, you know...
Love
conquers all. Love conquers all. And if what we're led to believe about the person that wrote in there, you know, he's gone back to his first love. It'll be his last love. And if he finishes the story, it'll be his everything. So, Billy, you are the dafty of the week, shall we say? Will we make that a thing? Will we make you dafty of the week? I don't know. We'll see how we go with this. But that concludes this week's The Daft Sheet, the first ever episode, the first ever edition of The Daft Sheet. So let's recap the headlines of this week. So the front page, Billy got that with Bloodline, Flatlines and Blood Money Beauty. Steve took the back page with Pillars Credit all maxed out. Page 3, that went to Steve as Jade kisses the TBS title goodbye. Billy got his pick in for Guardians of the Galaxy Part 3 as being our not necessarily wrestling-related thing to watch. I need to come up with something snappier for that. And Billy also prevailed as the agony aunt of the week with the Dear Dafties, as he said to our listener to finish the story. I have been Chris Jack. Billy, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you. You just witnessed and listened to the greatest comeback since Kim Kardashian. Thank you.
Nice. Love a good comeback story. Steve, thank you very much for joining us this week. You know, this is our first edition of the Daft Sheet under the Wrestling Daft podcast network, if it is that now. So just everything that John says, like and subscribe on your favourite podcast places, sign up to the Patreon so you can become part of the Discord and take part in some of the chats. And however you enjoy your wrestling, make sure that it's daft, make sure that it's sheety. Right. I've been Chris Jack. Cheerio!